You are about to listen to an episode of The Cypher before it was The Cypher. For our first 75 episodes, we were known as Outside the Lines with Rap Genius, and we had a slightly different format. In all honesty, our production value and sound quality today is much improved from these early episodes. That said, the content is so great that these shows are a valuable part of our archive. If you want more information about our transition, make sure to check out episode 76 with Ritz, which was our first one under the new name. To keep up to date on everything involving The Cypher, visit us online at thecyphershow.com or find us on iTunes. And now, without further ado, here's The Cypher before The Cypher.
Stop being a sissy, like a real song, and fucking, and drink a beer. Chill out.
Welcome to Outside the Lines with Rap Genius. I'm your host, Same Old Sean. This week, we talk to Peter Rosenberg of the legendary New York City radio station, Hot 97. Peter is a co-host of the station's popular morning show, as well as the host of their Sunday evening underground hip-hop program. He is also on the TV game show Hip Hop Squares. He runs a Noisemakers interview series. And as if that wasn't enough, he also hosts his own hip-hop podcast called Juan Epstein. We spoke to him at the Rap Genius office in Brooklyn.
Outside the Lines with Rap Genius, here with DJ PMD.
Whoa, did some research. Hello.
Known to most of the world as Peter Rosenberg. Yeah. Just kidding.
That does happen quite a bit. That happens in real life quite a bit.
I'm sure it does. I'm sure it does. Yeah.
Doesn't happen at the bank, unfortunately.
Right. Yeah, that must be weird, sharing a, you know, similar name to yet, you know, another sort
of
prominent hip-hop figure.
Especially with someone who's prominent, but in sort of an odd way.
Right. Behind the scenes and, like,
yeah, he's famous,
skits.
But people don't really even know, understand why. So it's very strange. And when people at first all thought I was him, right, I thought it was hilarious that they thought someone of Paul's wealth was waking up to do the morning show at 97. I thought it was always interesting.
Right. But getting up at 3 in the morning or whatever.
I don't know if I would be doing that if I had $100 million. But hey, that's me. But he's a great dude.
Yeah. Speaking of radio, I was listening to a Juan Epstein podcast from a while ago, and you said something that I thought was really interesting about radio and about your success in it. You said that basically you don't have a filter between what you're thinking and what you say, and that while that was, like, really your strength in radio, at least back then, tended to maybe get in the way in your personal life a little bit.
Yeah.
And so I was curious if you could just talk a little bit about how something that's your greatest strength professionally, like on the day-to-day level, can sometimes hurt you.
Well, I mean, I think what generally makes someone a compelling radio personality is if you don't know what they're going to say, and if you're waiting, you're kind of somewhat hanging on their words, because God willing, when people wake up in the morning and they turn on the show, they think, ooh, I hope Rosenberg's going to say something cool today, or I love when this guy talks, he always says something, or I hate this guy, he always says something that pisses me off, whatever it may be.
Yeah.
But, you know, I believe there are people out there who have also been successful too, fake it, and, you know, they kind of turn it on, and it's like, watch, here comes the crazy, here comes that wacky thing I'm going to say, and in real life you meet them and you're like, you're nothing like this, you're a square.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't really have a filter. The only filter I have is, like, you know, I have some line of, like, okay, I shouldn't say these words, or
sure,
I'll catch myself every blue moon, like, whoa, that would sound really crazy, you shouldn't say that.
Yeah.
But in real life, I just have a tendency to be the same way. You know, if I get into a conversation with people and we're on a topic that evokes certain feelings in me, I just say them. And you know, I it's something I learned from my dad, for better or for worse. Mm-hmm. And when I'm watching my dad, I'm like, oh, Dad, why are you saying that? You shouldn't say it. And I'll say to my wife, I'll be like, oh, can you believe my dad said blah, blah, what was he thinking? And then an hour later, we'll be somewhere. And she's like, Peter, you just did the same thing. And I'm like, oh. You know, it's one of those things where I don't bite my tongue very well. So
yeah.
And, you know, and it's cost me professionally also. It's not like I've never paid a price. Right. I've gotten fired from my show.
Well, you got fired for starting beef with popular people on your own station,
yes.
right? Back
yes.
in, like, what was it, 05, 06, somewhere
yeah.
around there?
Yeah, before I got up here, I got fired for talking trash about the big dog at the time of my old station.
Yeah.
And, you know, I sort of knew at the time it wasn't a great idea, but it was one of those things where I just kind of kept pushing the line because I did like the guy. Still don't.
Yeah.
And don't really have any regrets about, you know, saying those things. And I guess if the risk had been higher, maybe I would have thought I shouldn't say it. But
if someone had explicitly told you, you will get fired if
no,
you...
No, I had been told that.
Oh.
But I was told if I said his name, I would get fired.
Ah.
And I started using nicknames for him and sort of like going around it. And then, you know, and then it was a whole long story of treachery and people who worked with me kind of stabbing me in the back. But in the long run, I mean, it ultimately has paid off. And yeah. I'm very happy and comfortable with my life, you know, because I have a big mouth. So, and, you know, knock on wood, I managed to be respectful enough that people generally don't want to fuck me up. So,
yeah.
you know, I've had those moments too. But, you know, I try to not be disrespectful to people.
Yeah, yeah. I wanted to go back for a minute. I was reading an interview with you where you talked about, you know, sometime around middle school, sometime around like 7th, 8th grade, you started forming the identity as like the hip-hop dude,
mm-hmm.
right? And we're more or less the same age. I think I'm like 2 or 3 years older than you. And I remember that those days it was more unusual mm-hmm. to be a white kid and into hip-hop. I remember specifically like the term wigger was thrown around all the time mm-hmm. really derisively in a way that is almost unthinkable now.
Yeah.
And I was just, you know, curious if you could talk about what it was like for you at like 13, 14 to be a hip-hop fan and the kind of response you met from people around you.
Well, it definitely made me unique, you know. It was definitely like the most identifiable thing about me, and it was something I took a lot of pride in,
yeah.
was that, you know, I was that kid in school that, like, all the black kids asked about hip-hop. And I definitely took a lot of pride in that, being like, oh, I mean, sure, it was definitely an acceptance thing. And I think on some level, I definitely, you know, did want to be black. I definitely wanted to be down. Definitely. And I had no problem. I think most people who got into hip-hop in that era definitely wanted to be a part of the black culture. You know, that was the thing that I found intriguing and interesting and wonderful and really wanted to be a part of. So yeah. when I actually made it to the point where, like, people really respected my opinion, like, yo, he really cares. If you're looking to get some new music, ask him.
Yeah.
It meant a lot to me. You know, every once in a while, it's honestly hard to remember a time when I was given a hard time about it. I'm sure it happened, like, with someone yeah. I disliked. I can't say it happened all the time. More often than not, it really brought positive things to my life. But I will say, you know, it was totally different. The experience of a kid today being from the suburbs, being into hip-hop, it's not even an experience.
Right.
It's just life.
Yeah.
That's just
yeah.
called being an American.
Right.
So I do take pride in getting to grow up in that era where I would go to stores and there wasn't even a rap section for tapes. It was in
right.
the soul section. Like, you know,
yeah,
and,
I remember.
And doing research meant buying magazines and staying up late and listening to radio and fiddling with antennas so you could pick up small signal radio. Like,
yeah.
you know, it required you to put in a lot of work into yeah. the craft. And, you know, frankly, in a lot of ways, I feel like I earned my stripes to be a credible person in hip-hop that I believe I am now.
Yeah.
I earned it then, you know, and I always, if it comes down to a conversation with someone where I'm getting questioned on anything, I know my credibility isn't to be questioned. Like, I know I credit my brother a lot for that, for being the person who really got me into it. But like, I put in the work. I've not only put in the work in my career since I've been on,
right.
but I was putting in the work and studying and buying vinyl every week and buying albums every week and getting a job at a record label when I was 14 years old to save up for turntables. I worked to do it. And, yeah. and as a result, I think you find people from our generation who are incredibly passionate about this culture.
Yeah. Do you think that the kind of work kids are doing, like, is it less or just different now with, like, the fact that sort of a whole world of music and knowledge is sort of available at your fingertips now in a way that it wasn't?
It's less.
Yeah.
I mean, we can be nice about it, but it's less.
Yeah.
Even the kids I meet, and I meet a lot of kids, you know, family members have kids or, you know, I meet people who are 13, 14, 15 years old and aspiring DJs and talk to me about it. And
yeah.
I always get excited to help them out. And I'm not, like, disappointed or anything, but a lot of times what you see is the kids are super passionate. They have turntables. They have software. They have whatever they think. So you think that means they're going to be like the way I was.
Right.
So if I'm like, yo, you obviously know about blah, 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 blah. And I'm not even talking about old stuff. This right. might be current stuff that I'm putting them onto. But I assume they're going to know it because if you got to the point in 1994 when I got turntables,
yeah.
if you got to the point where you own turntables, you better believe you knew who Jay-Z and Original Flavor was or who right. Artifacts were. You knew all those people because you were a DJ.
Right.
So,
right.
But then these days, because it's so easy, kids might have turntables or whatever, but they really only know the surface shit. And they got their turntables and they download the MP3s and they see what's listed on the blogs and they're like, oh, I'll check that out. And I'm like, oh, well, so if you like this, you must also like that, because that would be the thing you'd have to like if you're into the music.
Yeah.
But it's not like that. They just downloaded that one isolated thing.
Yeah.
They're not really involved in the music.
Yeah.
Is that worse? Well, in my opinion, yes. I would slap my child if he did such a thing. But is it really bad? No. I mean, it's fine.
Right.
But I think ultimately you're going to end up with a generation of people that you know, when they get to be my age, they're not going to know it the way a lot of the people my age do. Like when I go around the industry and I meet people who are, you wouldn't even think are necessarily big hip hop heads because they're mainstream
right.
guys now, who when you talk to, they knew everything back then
yeah.
because they were passionate. They yeah. really worked to get to be there.
Yeah, no, so, I definitely believe that with some of the people I've interviewed, the sort of veteran artists, the wealth of knowledge they have. Even someone like, you know, Jay or whoever, you know, every record made prior to, you know, whatever, 95 or 96 or whatever he started his career, I'm sure he sort of had a grip on.
Yes,
because he had to.
A lot of them did.
Yeah, definitely. I wanted to talk about something, a phrase you use a lot. You use this phrase, real hip-hop, a lot. And I just wanted to kind of talk about that a little bit. What does that phrase mean to you? Does it mean something that's old? Does it mean something that sounds like it was done in RZA's basement in 1996? Does it not include stuff from the South? Like, is that unreal in some way?
Well, if you were to ask the nerdy, snarky writers of, like, Spin and the New York Times and all those places, they would say that I'm using it to, like, be divisive and put down tons of music. The only thing I mean by real hip-hop is the intent when making it was to make some good shit.
Mm-hmm.
That's really all I mean by it. Now, does that often have a sound that's similar? Yeah, you could. I'm not going to refer to something as, for example, Miguel Adorn is a great song. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to refer to it as real hip-hop because it's an R&B song. Or, you know, okay. Frank could have a song that I love. Or even a rapper could have a song that's, you know, Wale, who makes plenty of real hip-hop, I'm not going to call, like, Lotus Flower Bomb. I'm like, yo, that's not real hip-hop right there.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, obviously not. It's a girly song. It's fine. It has a place. It's cool. I don't mind Lotus Flower Bomb.
Mm-hmm.
But, yes, it's usually, I just mean it to say, people went in there trying to make some hip-hop shit. You know, and that's all. So, like, for example, if I say a thing about a record, I'm like, that's not real hip-hop, it can be blatantly obvious. Mm-hmm. You know, or it can be maybe a little more subtle, but it really doesn't mean that much, except this is some hot, good shit that those of us who appreciate the real shit, you know, if you list your favorite rap groups and you name EPMD and Outkast, is the kind of shit you're going to like. And I think that's very broad,
mm-hmm.
and it certainly can include Currency and Big Crit, and it could include Youngbloods and Lil Jon. It just totally depends on what's the song is.
Yeah.
And I think those generally, yourself included, but I know it's a good question to ask, but
yeah.
I think those generally who appreciate what real hip-hop is
yeah.
know exactly what I mean when they hear that kind of music.
Right, well, that's the thing, is like, it's sort of, you know, it's like obscenity, right? You know it when you hear it, but when you try to define it, it gets kind of slippery.
Well, and that's why I was a little bit resentful when a lot of articles came out that no one else would have paid attention to, but that I did, because it was about me, obviously,
yeah.
in the post-Nicki Minaj thing, and they're like, oh, why, when he says real hip-hop, he's being so dismissive. No, I was being dismissive of Starships, which not only is it not real hip-hop, it's not hip-hop,
right, she's saying
period.
Yeah.
It is a pop song
right.
with a pop producer and pop vocals, and everything about it is pop. This isn't crazy. So to act as if I'm, like, keeping hip-hop in a box because I say that is right. ludicrous. And it's an attempt by nerdy writers to try to sound cool by protecting music that's popular. Because for a long time, nerds were really proud to like underground shit, right? But now the in thing is for a lot of nerds to pretend they're cool by liking and finding importance mm-hmm. in commercial music. They're like, no, how can you not appreciate the importance of Taylor Swift? Her music's incredible. No one's doing what she does. And I'm like, well, I won't deny that a very pop pseudo-country artist is somewhat important, because I guess she's bringing certain fans a certain way and it affects the music industry. But you're not telling me that her music is phenomenal, are you? But they really will pretend that, because it makes the writer important. Mm-hmm. And I really believe that.
You really believe that to a certain extent that's a put-on?
Oh, it's totally a put-on. Yeah. They don't like it.
Yeah.
No writer likes Starships. There's no... I don't even believe people like Nicki's last album, because it wasn't good.
Right.
Maybe this new one that she's putting out, maybe this reloaded version with all the rap songs would be good, but that album wasn't good. It wasn't succinct. It was all over the place.
Sure.
It had random pop shit, and then a song with 2 Chainz. It didn't have any continuity, and she's talented.
Yeah.
And it's an annoying conversation to constantly feel like I'm like, no, I mean it. Nicki's really good, but I mean it.
Yeah.
I think she's super talented. Does she annoy me? Yeah, she annoys the shit out of me.
Yeah.
But I think she takes herself too seriously and doesn't understand how to have some good fun in hip-hop and make some good real rap records.
Yeah.
Is she talented? No fucking question. Of course
yeah.
she is.
Yeah, I actually wanted to ask you, I mean, I didn't want to spend a gang of time on the Summer Jam thing because I've been talked to death, but there was one quick thing about that. What was interesting to me about it was the clashing contexts, right? When you were hosting that stage, you treated it like effectively what it was, a show at like an SOBs type venue, mm-hmm. where you were there to hype up the crowd, right? But there was this other context to the show, the giant Summer Jam, sort of mega artist thing. And so I guess I was just wondering how you felt when you saw your relatively normal hosting shtick had been seen this entirely other way,
Well, that's a really great way of putting it, because
yeah.
afterwards, when a lot of people ask me, like, what happened? I'm like, nothing.
Yeah.
I don't want to tell you, nothing happened. Listen, yeah. in wrestling, when you go to do a show in St. Louis, you say, you know what? I love coming to St. Louis. There's no one I love more than Kurt Warner and Marshall Faulk. And the crowd all cheers to get a pop because you're in St. Louis and you mention people who are from St. Louis.
Yeah.
It's called a cheap pop. That's all you do when you're hosting stages, right? The goal is to get the crowd animated. So if I'm introducing Kendrick Lamar, naturally, I'm going to bring... Now, it happens in this case that I really believe... In this case, I happen to really love Marshall Faulk and Kurt Warner because I believed what I said
right.
about Starships. But I was also just saying, because I'm like, well, these are the people who were standing in the rain before Summer Jam. It was starting to pour, and they were out there in the rain to see A$AP Rocky, Kendrick, etc.
Yeah.
So I was just saying it. It didn't even cross my mind.
Yeah.
And then another 2 hours passed, and there was no thought of it. Yeah. I didn't ever think about it ever again.
And it's a national media event.
And then it became an event. So it was really, I have to say, it was a really fun day. It was a very exciting, bizarre day. But it was frustrating when people were like, what are you doing? And I was like, if you ever see me host a show... Cursing and trying to hype up the crowd is basically my...
Right, that's what you do.
That's what I do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the one thing that did bug me a little bit about the comment was kind of something that I don't think was really picked up anywhere else. To me, it was sort of the genderizing of the people who like Starships. Because, you said... the exact words, but, there are some chicks here who are here to tear Starships or something to that effect. And it seemed to me like only mentioning girls as fans of that song sets up, by contrast, men as fans of real hip-hop, the kind on that stage, and excludes women from the category of people who might like that music. And also sort of implies that men, in turn, don't like pop, which, Kelly Clarkson's second album is certainly in my, top 25, so, say that that's... not true. Like, was that your intention to kind of set up this binary?
No, of course not. And that was something that was picked up quite a bit.
Okay.
The gender thing, I think Kara Manica wrote about in the Times. A couple people talked about it and really went much less polite than you're being about it. More like, I am a sexist pig. When you say, I think the line was something like, oh, I know there's some chicks who are here to hear Starships.
Right.
First of all, that's not to imply that there aren't also chicks that are here to see real shit.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, am I sort of implying that there may be girls who come to Summer Jam with the intent of hearing just the poppiest songs on the radio? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And do I think it's sexist to say that there are still girls who aren't that into music but like to hear the poppiest songs on the radio and go to concerts and see pop songs? No. I think it's okay to say that. I think it's true. If every indication of my entire life is that there are plenty of passionate women who love hardcore music,
yeah,
but there are also a lot of girls you meet who are more surface even than a lot of men that I know about music, no, I think that happens a lot. Mm. I don't think that's a negative quality. It's not like I was saying, and their intellect on music is horrible. I'm just implying I don't think there were a lot of dudes or chicks who love hip-hop or dudes who love hip-hop who showed up to Summer Jam that day saying, well, I'm going to get that building. I better hear Starships in this shit. Mm-hmm. I think you'd be more likely the girls who are 17 years old and are lightly into music who are really into Starships. I don't know that you find passionate music fans who love Starship, or if they are passionate, they're not over the age of 17 yet and have experienced what good music sounds like.
Right.
And if that sounds snobby, well, I'm sorry. But I can certainly understand why it would sound that way, and certainly make the case that in saying that, you're saying, well, no, I meet tons of chicks who love real hip-hop all the time, who really support the real shit, no question, and who hate pop shit. And yes, you do meet dudes who like Starships.
Right.
Is it okay for me to make fun of those dudes, in my opinion? Yes. So I don't feel bad about it. Stop being a sissy, like a real song, and fucking and drink a beer. Chill out. Like, listen, I love pop shit too. I love the Dixie Chicks. I love Lady Gaga music. I love a lot of pop shit. Yeah. That's bad pop shit. So it's generic carbon copy whack shit. If I meet a dude who said they like that, yeah, I don't care what that dude is like, I'm going to make fun of him. And right, that's okay. That's right, just what I'm like. And again, like, I'm a personality hosting a concert for my radio station. The fact that Nikki made it into this big sex thing too, because she said, I called out the only female artist. She goes, what kind of man calls out a woman? Oh, I'm sorry. Are you suggesting that in 2012, we're still supposed to be, women are so dainty and so barely allowed to be in the music business, yeah, that I can't diss their whack shit?
Right.
That's horrible. That would be truly sexist. I'm like, listen, I would say something, but she's a girl. You don't say anything about a woman's music. That's crazy talk. Yeah. That's absolutely crazy talk. And when she said that, it was the cheapest argument that got made, was her accusing me of being sexist for calling her out. There weren't other people on that stage that were worthy of being called out because they had a ridiculous pop song but claimed to be rappers at the time.
Right.
Otherwise, they would trust and believe, as Kay Fox would say. They would have gotten it too, I promise.
Nice. Well, kind of pivoting from that to the concept of beef and disagreements more generally, I saw an interview with you where you said that the days of hip-hop being about beef are coming to a close. You were talking specifically about Drake and Common, and like, you kind of always knew it would end with them, like, you know, hanging out and having a beer and getting over their problems.
Burning some incense.
Exactly.
Watching, yeah, Love and Basketball.
Exactly. Isn't it a large part of hip-hop to be competitive and have battles and beefs amongst performers? Like, what does it change if that doesn't happen anymore? Or if when that happens, everyone from the artists to the fans to the media knows that to some extent it's staged?
It's interesting. It's an interesting situation because beef goes one of two ways. It's either totally fake and turns out to be nothing,
right,
or it goes too far. It's very rare that there's that LL Cool J, Cool Moe Dee balance.
Right. You know where there's actual antagonism, but it's just records.
Antagonism, records.
Yeah.
You see each other. I mean, listen, it's the sort of relationship I have with the guys who do the radio show across the street. Yeah. We do that. It's legit antagonism on the air. We say things that when we are going at each other is pretty intense and nasty. I do not think when we see each other it's any more than, what's up, man? That's just, we're in the business.
Yeah.
We don't like each other, but we're not going to kill each other. So, unfortunately, in hip-hop, I think every artist has a lot of people that care about them and a lot of people who want to protect them and in some cases want to prove themselves to them.
Mm.
So, I had a conversation with Big Crit about this recently, like, off air, actually. We were talking about, I was like, why doesn't anyone beef anymore, man? I was like, there's no good, like, records where people go in, like, I was like, why aren't people dissing so-and-so right now? Everyone,
yeah.
And he was just like, because I think for a lot of people, they know that if it goes that direction, especially with the internet, the way people comment online, yeah, say these nasty things, artists are sensitive, feelings get hurt. And I think as a result, we can't even have a good, healthy beef anymore because it's going to go all the other way.
Right.
In the case of Common and Drake, you know these guys are really smart, have way too much to lose.
Yeah.
They don't want a fist fight. They're lovers, not fighters.
Yeah.
They're good artists, and it's not going to be that bad.
Yeah.
You know, frankly, their beef was pretty good. When you really go back and look at it,
yeah.
They took some good shots at each other.
Yeah.
They both did.
Yeah, good record.
They took some good shots at each other. You know, Drake had his verse of the year on Stay Scheming, I think, because of that.
Yeah.
I loved his verse on that. And, you know, it ended with them shaking hands. I made the joke about Incense and Love of Basketball because, you know, Drake and Common are sensitive, you know, as artists.
Right.
But that's how it should end, mm-hmm. really. I still don't think they're best friends.
Sure.
I still don't think you're going to see them hanging out together. That's another thing, too. Like, gentlemen bump into each other and look polite. That doesn't mean that they're like, I love you, man. You know, it's
yeah.
that, and that's probably, frankly, how it should end. So I hope I was wrong when I said that and that there is the era of, you know, now these days it seems like Cassidy and Meek Mill are going at it. But even in that case, it's not necessarily fair because you have someone who's kind of starving to get another shot in Cassidy. A talented guy, but a guy who's kind of starving to get a shot.
Yeah.
And Meek Mill, who's sitting there deciding, like, do I want to give this guy any shine? Is it really worth my time?
Mm-hmm.
What you really want to see is... What you really want to see is that good music versus Young Money.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you really want to see. Cats who are both at the top.
Has been, you know, sort of that in particular is on the sort of subliminal level right now.
Right. But again, I do think in the case of that, there are a lot of people who would take that very seriously.
Right.
And so it's not worth it to go there on both sides.
Right.
And it's just not worth it to go there. But from a music standpoint, man, a lot of times beef brings out the best in music. I've wanted to see Wayne get into beef because I felt like Wayne hasn't been that strong recently, and him getting someone to get his goat a little bit
right.
would really get him
right.
in the zone. So
right.
I enjoy that stuff. But
yeah, he hasn't really been in a beef since, you know, when he was a kid with Mystical or something.
Right, I know, right? Yeah, it's been... He's taken, like, he took that shot back at Pusha, but it wasn't
right.
good.
Right, and he had a long string of subliminals at Jay.
Yeah,
and, like,
oh, yeah, that's right, of course,
know,
for a few
yeah,
years.
For a few years. Your first big-time commercial radio gig, we talked about this a little earlier, was in D.C.
Mm-hmm.
on PGC,
mm-hmm.
right? I was reading about that show, and I saw something about it that kind of surprised me. You said the thing I read, and maybe it was incorrect, I didn't hear the show, I wasn't living in D.C. at the time, said that you rarely talked about anything personal during that show, which is a huge contrast, obviously, from your radio personality now. So my question is, like, how did you come to feel comfortable talking about yourself, your background, your personal life in a commercial radio context?
I wasn't encouraged to do that then.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had a program director who's a brilliant program director who's had a great career, but he was white. And he didn't believe that a black audience would really want... I don't believe... He never said this to me point blank, but they never wanted me talking about being white. They, you know, it was never really mentioned.
Yeah.
So, like, every blue moon, another one of the jocks would, like, make a joke if they're like, you know... But by and large, we would make jokes about it off the air all the time to each other, but on the air, it was kind of like I was just, like, a generic voice, which is, like, sort of this thing that's... It's often done in, like, Boston. Like, you'll always hear these, like... corny radio hosts who, like, you can't tell if they're white or black. You're just like, oh, no, they're definitely white, but they're just not, like, acknowledging it.
Yeah.
And so I would have been personal then. Like, at the same time, I was doing my college radio show, and I was living my whole life out loud on my college radio show.
Sure.
But it was just kind of encouraged not to, and it took until I got my my current boss who was like, no, you're going to be you. That's what would be hot.
Mm-hmm.
So it really wasn't a personal choice. I always wanted to be... You know, like Howard, I always looked up to Howard Stern and always dreamed of being, like, really personal. And that was always the vibe I did. I've shared my breakups on the air. And, you know, I've had women I was with call up when I'm fighting with them. I've practically had a date on the air before. I used to have this girl who I always would, like, talk about how much I loved her. And I, like, stalked her and she was scared of me.
Yeah.
And one day I brought her up to the radio station. This is on a gig after that.
Yeah.
And I brought her up to the radio station and, like, asked her about how I scared her off by making her a mixtape and stuff. And she was, like, known by the audience. Like, people knew who this girl was.
Wow.
So I've always enjoyed doing that. It's just a matter of having the format that allows you to do it.
Have you had to be different in different radio formats? I know you did rock, you did talk, you did hip-hop. Do you have to be a different person on
rock,
each of those?
I was a phony.
Okay.
Besides that, that was it. I mean, rock, I knew nothing. I don't know modern rock at all.
Yeah.
So... This was in, like, now it wouldn't even be modern rock, but this was, like, the late 90s. It was, like, Foo Fighters record and stuff like that.
Okay. You was know? This before the turn to, like, all rap rock all the time?
No, this was when I was on PGC, and then they had a sister station, which at the time was very famous, named WHFS.
Mm-hmm.
And they they were in the same building, and they needed a part-timer, so they put me on the rock station.
Yeah.
So I was part-time on both. And then when I lost that job, I lost both those jobs at the same time.
Right.
So it was just a little stint of, like, 6 months where I did rock radio. But it was fun, and it was a good experience to, like, be that guy, but it sounds unnatural. I found the tapes recently,
yeah,
and it just sounds ridiculous. I'm not a rock guy. I love, there's rock music I love,
sure,
but I am not a rock guy, and me trying to pull it off is totally inauthentic, so... but no, I don't. So generally, with the exception of that, on my talk radio show, I was hip hop me. You know, if you listen to old tapes back in the day, my voice sounded a little different. I definitely sounded like I was trying a little bit. Like I'd be more like, yeah, you know what's going on. It's PMD, blah, blah. I sound a little bit more, a little less nerdy than I sound now.
Sure.
But that's just because that's the, I've gotten more comfortable, and it's what my the station has wanted me to be. It's really be myself, you know?
That's awesome. And some one part of you is being a big fan. And you know, I was reading something where you talked about how being a fan is kind of becoming this lost art amongst like hip-hop media. Everyone has to pretend that they're sort of unimpressed or on the same level as the artist they're talking to or whatever. Why do you think that pose kind of started? Because that seems relatively new. And what do you think is being lost with that pose becoming so sort of omnipresent?
Well, I think you end up not getting the same information about the music because in not being a fan, you're not studying their craft the same way.
Yeah.
And, you know, I can be guilty of that too, but in my case, it's not my pride that's doing it. It's more my laziness. I'm just like, oh, there's so many artists. I'm not following enough of what they're doing. But I think in the social media world, everyone thinks of themselves as a star in some way.
Right.
So it's like, if I'm too big a fan, then who am I? Just a fan? Yeah, motherfucker, you're just a fan. Be a fan.
Yeah.
And so if I, you know, when I, even the artists that I have good relationships with, I still do not hold back calling myself a fan, referencing their songs. Styles P came into our show today.
Yeah.
He's done our show 1,000 times. He's performed at my birthday party. He's as close to someone, and I would say, you know, I have a close to a friend relationship with Styles P.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole, I just remember this. It wouldn't have ever crossed my mind except I started thinking about it, recent interviews, and it popped in my head. I realize now, the whole last 20 minutes before he left the station, I just kept being like, yo, you know what's awesome? That song, I'm the Ghost, that Pharrell did. You don't even remember that, do you? Do you? And he's like, no, I remember it. He's like, ignoring me. I'm like, I'm the Ghost. Wow. You don't know that. You don't remember that song. And he's like, no, I remember it, man. I was like, that song's fucking awesome. That song ever come out? Oh, fuck, I want to go home and listen to that song. It's so good. And I mean it. And yeah. I don't know, man. We all just start feeling ourselves. Everyone gets into business and starts feeling themselves. The problem is, I have the right to feel myself. I'm on Hot 97 for fuck's sake. God damn it. I was a long way from Chevy Chase. Feel myself. You're random person. You're just fucking, you have 2,000 followers on Twitter.
Right.
You just do a blog that according to Alexa, is 140,000 in the world. Like, shut up, man. Don't act like you're too cool to be a fan.
Right.
And I'm still not too cool to be a fan.
Yeah.
So that is frustrating. I don't get why, to me, it's the reason we do it. It's in wrestling, it's the same thing. In wrestling, if you're obsessed with wrestling or you love it too much, you're called a mark. Meaning that a mark is the term that refers to people who back in the day were marks, like at the carnival, like they literally believed it was real when someone would get pinned or they would get up there and try to wrestle someone and lose. And they were called marks. And so a lot of people use the term mark like negatively. And I'm like, dude, I don't know if you noticed this. I'm sitting at WrestleMania in another city. I flew myself here. I'm a fucking mark, and I'm proud of it. I love this shit. I love wrestling. So it's the same thing with hip-hop.
And in turn, you need those people to even have a...
There is nothing there.
Yeah.
It's an empty building, which has made for a couple of great matches. But generally, it's not something that should be done. Yeah. And it's the same thing in hip-hop. Like, if I wasn't a geek who loved these rappers and loved their music, I wouldn't have a career or a life. So I'm really not embarrassed to really fan out, especially for the legends and the guys who I grew up on.
Right.
Yeah, fine, I may not fan out the same way if it's someone who literally, I was their first interview, and they were more excited to meet me at the time when I met them. Yeah, the relationship may be a little different, but still, like, I'm a stan of Kendrick right now. I mean, I geek out. Like, I'm texting him and being like, dude, you said blah, blah, blah. What? That's crazy. I mean, he's fucking amazing.
Yeah.
We should be excited about people that are amazing. And I don't get why people act too cool.
Yeah, yeah. You gave a really great definition of the word soul a while back. You said it was...
God, I said, according to him, I've said so many important things.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Who knew?
So you called it... Yeah.
Going deep.
You called it the meeting point of struggle, passion, and expression. And
I said that.
You said that.
Bullshit.
Really?
No, maybe I did, but yeah. If I did, I'm a genius.
So, who is someone, and it doesn't even necessarily have to be a rapper or a musician at all, obviously I know you're a big fan of you know, sports and wrestling, etc., who you view as producing, by that definition, work that is soulful, who people would be surprised to hear you say?
Two Chains. Do you say what, in sports world, or do you say in the hip hop world?
In anything.
In anyone.
Anywhere. Two Chains.
I think people might be surprised to hear me say about Two Chains. And I think you hear it, I don't think you hear it in every verse necessarily.
Yeah.
But in Two Chains, you have a guy who's been grinding it out for years.
Right.
Years. And had times where he thought it would happen, wouldn't happen, and now is finally getting his shot and feels it, and
yeah.
You can, the soul of Two Chains, you really don't need to look further than like his verse on the Kanye shit.
Mm-hmm.
What's that song called? I've only heard it 75,000 times. Mercy,
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah,
he is that record. Like, when Two Chains comes on Mercy,
yeah.
It's like he's connected to it.
Right.
Like, his voice is part of the music.
Because he knew that was his shot.
I mean, it was a huge moment for him.
Yeah.
And he was just getting over. And then, just in general, it's something you literally hear in him. I mean, it's the same. You know, obviously, Kendrick is way more complex than Two Chains lyrically. But Kendrick is someone you hear it all the time.
Yeah.
You can hear the soul in him.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I can't give you a ton of examples these days.
Sure.
But it when it's there, it's special. You know, and it's random, the people I think have had. I think Yellow Wolf has it. You hear the struggle of his life, mm-hmm. when every time Yellow Wolf raps, you can kind of hear that.
Yeah.
But it's one of the times when the music is special, you know.
Wow. So you were saying, you know, you don't find it much these days or whatever. And so I the interesting thing about you and your place now is you have this morning show thing, right? But you're very open about not liking a lot of the music you play. You always say, oh, well, the volume's turned down when we're playing this or that. We don't even listen to it in the studio, blah, blah, blah. And you kind of say that stuff publicly. So how do you deal with being surrounded by so much music that you don't like?
I mean, well, once you hear it 100 times in a week, you like it. And that evidence suggests that's true of everyone.
Right.
You know, I turn down the music a lot because there is shit I hear way too much. And I may like it, but not enough to hear it as many times as I hear it.
Sure.
If you were to go through the rotation on Hot 97, I would say I like most of the songs we play.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are songs that come out. There have been moments in the last few years,
mm-hmm.
where, you know, there have been some of those dance joints that came out, whether it's the Soulja Boy record, or there have been moments when it's been like absolutely painful,
mm-hmm.
and you survive by waiting for the Kanye record to come on, waiting for the Jay-Z record to come on.
Okay.
These days, you know, waiting for the Miguel record to come on. Like, there are really good artists who are performing right now.
Yeah.
But by and large, like I said, I don't think it's that necessarily the quality of music is terrible. It's that it's not diverse enough, and that you hear the songs that are more terrible way too often.
Okay.
But, you know, getting to talk, as you can tell, is something I like, so it's worth it to sit through those songs.
Yeah, and the morning show specifically, I was listening to this old Juan Epstein from like 09 or something, maybe right, I don't know if that was right when you started the morning show or in the beginning.
We started days, in, I think, 07.
Okay, so this was well into it then. But you were talking about, there were sort of two sides. You were saying, like, radio, you're meant to be impermanent. The whole function of your job is if you disappear, the next day no one realizes it, and everything sort of keeps going, and you're kind of talking about lamenting that, but you're also saying, like, I think that my function at the morning show is, you know, not irreplaceable, but something very specific. And you kind of, I guess maybe because the show was relatively new, you didn't really go into what you thought it was, what you sort of saw your function in the morning show as being, and what you thought Hot was allowing you to bring to the table. Do you think that, do you still feel like that way? Like, you have this very specific role at Hot 97. Do you feel like your function there maybe has changed over the past couple of years?
Yeah, to an extent, you know, and I, again, no one's irreplaceable in radio, so I can't say I wish I could say that I was. However, I think I would have tough shoes to fill. My entire life, I grew up thinking that there was going to be this white DJ who was going to come along before me and occupy the space that I currently occupy. And I have to say, honestly, and I haven't thought about this in a long time, but it amazes me that it didn't happen. Like, it really blows, because I meet so many, like you, I meet so many nonstop. I meet white kids who are as passionate and loving and knowledgeable and respectful of hip-hop as I am. You know, when I was young, I didn't want to admit that. I was like, oh, all the other white kids are posers. No. As time went on, I met tons of other white kids who truly are respectful of the culture and know it and could do well. Yeah. And somehow, I assume one
first.
Of those would also, you know, have maybe the gift of gab and entertainment value and be able to put together the package, and I wouldn't get there.
Yeah.
And somehow I did. And I cannot believe that in getting there in 2007, when you're talking about I wanted to be on Hot starting like 94,
right.
It's like so shocking to me that that didn't happen. But to be honest, it really hasn't happened since me either. I mean, there are other white guys out there who do a good job, and I'm not questioning them at all, but they still don't occupy quite the same space of being kind of funny and entertaining while really hardcore committed to, like, the cause of hip-hop.
Yeah.
And I think in that long answer is what I bring to the table for them.
Yeah.
Is A, Hot 97 is a station that reflects New York as a whole, and we have the most diverse city in the world.
Right.
So the idea of there not being some white or Jewish voice on the show
in New York City.
In New York City is a little weird because, let's be honest, I would say 90% of white and Jewish kids who grow up in the New York area have Hot 97 programmed and listen to it.
Right.
So why, I don't care what the numbers show, we know if you live in this area, you know everyone knows Hot 97. So why wouldn't there be? So I think they could get another white guy on the morning show. But if they did, it would be hard to make someone who, it wasn't like, I don't know, a total gimmick or like people truly believed it.
Yeah.
And not everyone believes it, but in terms of you go for the best numbers that you can. And I think I give us the best shot at that. And then furthermore, I've become the guy who fills the role of really actively pursuing new music and building relationships with up and coming artists and, you know, helping us get involved at South by Southwest and, you know, helping out with our SOBs, Who's Next, that was created by my man Chris Nadler, rest in peace, who, that I've been a big part of, or, you know, the Summer Jam Festival stage, you know, all those things. I think I play a good role for them in that. And I think also, you know, people have been to the stage, Angie's loves music, Flex loves music, Camilo, and everyone loves music, but everyone have been around for a while. And it's always nice to inject someone new who comes in who's like, no, I'm really psyched too. And then at some point, I'll be faded and boring. And I'll meet the new one who's like, I'm like, I don't listen to music anymore. And they're like, I do. And,
right.
You know, I think it's important to have that guy around.
Yeah, you kind of tease Syfe about that on air. That's part of your dynamic, that he's like over music and excited about comedy and improv. And
that's
you're
it.
Still into music.
Listen, Syfe's been, and I'll tell you, Syfe just celebrated, I think, 15 years at the radio station.
Wow.
So that makes sense. Although he does love this kid, Bodega Bams. He's very excited about Bodega Bams. So every once in a while, Syfe finds someone who gets him excited. But yeah, and it makes sense. And after 15 years at the radio station, you know, Hot 97 is an amazing place because it gives you the opportunity to spread your wings and do a whole lot. So Flex loves music, but Flex also has car shows, television shows.
Yeah.
Angie has a ton of things going on. She's always hosting this or hosting that or doing a television show or whatever.
Yeah.
Syfe has a comedy show. He does all these, you know, everyone has a lot going on. Yeah. So it makes sense that as if you've been there 10, 15 years, you're like, well, I'm not only a radio host anymore. I'm now a little bit older and I do this and I do that and I do, and I'm, you know, hoping I get to that same place where I'm listening to rap casually, but the problem is I'm always going to want to do a weekly show where I'm playing new shit.
Yeah.
I'm sort of stuck. It's just a matter of, am I as good as I could be? It's impossible. Yeah. Last week, Na Wright did a roundup. It was like the roundup of the week's music. And I was like, fuck, I'm not going to be able to download all this shit. Even though it's sitting all in front of me, I still don't have time to download all this shit.
Yeah.
You know, it's like on a radio show, I can only add so many new records a week if you want to give a record any sort of life and longevity. You know, like,
yeah.
I'm still playing a Flatbush Zombies record that's been out for 6 months because on the radio, I don't want to give them the newest thing off the blog every week. You want to build a song up,
yeah,
and play it over time. So it's very hard for me to stay up with everything. But, you know, compared to when I'm one day an old fogey, I'm doing a pretty good job.
Excellent. And so what's going on for you now? What's, like, any more Noisemaker events planned, or what's going on?
I will do Noisemakers at South by Southwest. Mm-hmm. Don't know who yet, but I hope it's someone awesome, because Nas last year was pretty awesome.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's kind of a little frustrating that Noisemakers has kind of become more yearly than it is monthly.
Sure.
You know, that was a series that I'm really proud of, and I want to release all the videos in full because it really has a lot of hip-hop history on them.
Yeah.
But we pitched it to television for a long time. We actually partnered with Q-Tip, and we were, like, going around because Q-Tip loved it. And
yeah.
So we were going around pitching it, and TV never bought. No, I never jumped at it. Apparently they fancied me more as a game show host than a hip-hop interviewer, but hey, who knows?
Yeah.
I've only been doing it 15 years, but... So, you know, that we'll definitely do that South By, and in the next month or two, I'm going to have a... There's going to be something coming popping up online where I'm doing something that's Noisemakers-like, that's regular and nerdy and awesome, that I'm going to be doing real soon.
Excellent.
So, you know, between that and... I still do my Sunday night show, midnight to 2 every week. I do the morning show, and then Hip Hop Squares is on Tuesday nights on MTV2, and, you know, hopefully more and more and more. And always with... My dream would be late night TV show, mainstream America. You may even see me doing, like, I'll do Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. I'll do any of it.
Mm-hmm.
As long as on Sunday nights I have a place to go do my hip hop shit,
yeah,
then I'm good. Because let me tell you, that game show life is the shit. It's radio nonsense every morning. It's for the birds. TV is...
Really? Going once a week? And
oh, no. It was every day for a few weeks. But they pick you up in car service. They have food everywhere. Everyone tells you you're great. All your lines are written for you.
You get to drink on set.
You can drink. Do whatever you want. Everyone's like, if you don't like something, they change it. Like, there are people who help you get dressed. It's amazing.
Yeah.
People who help me wipe my ass. It's just, it's radio, it's like... No frills, for the most part.
Sure.
At least day-to-day at work. And I'm not... First of all, let me not say that radio's hard. It's not. It's compared to real jobs. As my man Wax put out a song recently,
yeah.
I'm not a real man. I ain't a real man. Real men work.
Yeah.
Digging in dirt.
Yeah.
I don't do that. I sit in a radio station. So it's still easy. Don't get me wrong. Yeah. But comparatively, you have to do a 4-hour show. You have to prep it. Nothing's written. There's no real help. You know, in entertainment, I think the morning show is basically the hardest gig you can possibly have.
Sure.
Between the hours, the amount of content, and how little credit you get for it, considering the snarky mainstream media doesn't even respect radio.
Right.
You know, it's a really rough gig. Whereas you get into television, and it's so much less to do, and everyone's like, welcome to television.
Right.
This is where it really happens.
Newspapers have TV critics.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, in the Daily News, they have a TV and radio thing, but the radio thing gets a little... We get a little bit in there, but not as much as TV gets. And really, TV is... And the crazy thing is, on radio, a lot of times, you're reaching more people.
Right.
Like, I'll see... I have friends in TV, and we joke about the shows that they work on, because they get these ridiculous guests, and they have no ratings. No one watches the show. Midday cable television?
Right.
No one watches... Who watches midday cable television? Who has time to watch... Listen, maybe... Because of bars and dudes at their offices keep on that show, like the Skip Bayless show on ESPN.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, that's one show I can tell it gets those numbers. You can tell by the advertising they're doing numbers. Most people aren't doing numbers. the morning show, we're reaching a ridiculously vast audience every day in a very direct way.
Yeah, everyone in every car.
You're getting tons of people, and it's very frustrating sometimes. Like, when a movie comes out, they'll send these top Hollywood stars to these whack TV shows where no one's watching and not realize, like, you know, Hot 97, you know, we reach quite a few. It would be worth having the star of this movie that also has Method Man in it. You may want to send the star of that movie to the radio station and let them tell the audience it's out tonight. They're on their way to work. Maybe they're looking for plans.
Right.
Anyways, that's a whole different thing. My frustrations with the radio and the rest of the world is another story. But yeah, that's what I got going on.
Okay. Awesome. Well, thank you.
And I'm signed up for Rap Genius now.
Yes.
So I'm verified, by the way. So don't fuck with it. I'm going to be dropping some serious gems. And me and my brother are going to be on there nerding it up. And I'm excited about that. It's a super cool site.
You've been listening to Outside the Lines with Rap Genius. Next week on the show, we talk to Reggie Osei, better known as Combat Jack. Reggie is the host of the Combat Jack Show and a noted blogger. But before all that, he was a high-powered music attorney with his hands in pretty much every hot song of the 90s. We talk to him about his radio hosting, his lawyering days, and his recent run-ins with a certain website known as Rap Genius. This show was recorded by the incredible Marguerite of LA Stereo TV with help from Dan Berger. Our show's intern is loyal Sonny Kahara. Music by Psionic. This show was produced and engineered by Josh Cross at Crosstown Studios.
I'm a genius!
Be sure to join us next week on Outside the Lines with Rap Genius.